good evening, everyone. Oh, if you're listening to the program on Saturday morning, good morning. This is Lou Caraholy, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here it is. I'm recording this 2 days before Christmas, and you'll probably be hearing it either on Christmas Day or a couple days after that. Here we are, Christmas 2025, just about to come. Well, we have a lot of things to talk about today. The first one is to do with the holidays in a negative way. So let me launch right into that, and then we'll talk about some other things as time goes on. The first article I have here is from the Washington Times, and it appeared on Friday, December 19, 2025, and it was by Brad Matthews. And the headline reads, Paris, Hong Kong, other major cities canceling or changing New Year's Eve plans. Multiple major world cities, including Paris, Hong Kong, and Belgrade. I'm not quite sure about my pronunciation with a lot of these words, so I'll apologize ahead of time. Not sure whether it's Belgrade or Belgrade, Serbia. In my day, it used to be Czechoslovakia, I think, but now it's Serbia. So anyway, these major world cities have canceled or altered their New Year's Eve celebrations over security concerns. Belgrade Mayor Alexander Sapic, and again, I'm not sure it's S-A-P-I-C, but a little accent over the S, another little accent over the C, but I'll call it Sapic. Alexander Sapic announced the city would not hold official celebrations on either New Year's Eve or on Serbian New Year, which is January 13th, 14th. He cited security issues at concerts last year as the cause of the cancellation. And here's a quote from the mayor. He said, most of the people who come to these concerts are children, ages 13 to 15, mostly girls. Last year, we had a case where a group of people tried to break through the fence and fight with concert goers. We will not organize a reception until we are sure that 500 or 1,000 men will not try to break into the concert and traumatize the children. I have no intention of doing that, so there will be no New Year's concert, Mr. Sapic told reporters, according to Serbian newspaper Politica, as translated from the Serbian. In Paris, the decision to cancel the concerts held along the Champs-Élysées was spurred by the Paris police prefecture. Jean Doutsayer, mayor of the 8th arrondissement, or district of Paris, said the police were concerned about, quote, unpredictable crowd movements, unquote, and that they said the Champs-Élysées is not, quote, designed to accommodate this type of demonstration where people are constantly moving around, unquote. And that's according to French newspaper, Le Monde, as translated from the French. There will be a fireworks display at the Champs-Élysées, according to Le Monde. In Hong Kong, officials did not provide an exact reason for canceling fireworks at the city's Victoria Harbor. Instead, the countdown to 2026, will be held in the city's central district, according to the South China Morning Post. One bustling Tokyo district, Shibuya, I guess that's how you say it, S-H-I-B-U-Y-A, also canceled celebrations, which have not been held since New Year's Eve 2019. Shibuya Mayor Ken Asebe cited public drunkenness and rowdy behavior as a reason to keep the celebrations at the Shibuya railway station on ice. That's according to Tokyo tourism information site, Time Out Tokyo. Well, as far as I know, the major celebrations in this country, Times Square and so forth, are still on. And let's hope they continue to be on. But also let's pray that we don't have any tragic incidents or other disturbances. That again was from the Washington Times last Friday, December 19th. And the headline read, Paris, Hong Kong, other major cities canceling or changing New Year's Eve plans. Again, you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Luke Caverly, and you can hear this program on many venues. For the complete list, go to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. And you can hear us Thursday evenings on WWCR.com, the Worldwide Christian Radio Station. And that shortwave, 4.840 megahertz. That's Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And their program repeats Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on a frequency of 7.490. And again, you can also hear it on the Internet. And you can hear it by going to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and you can hear the listening archives or any past show. Well, now, I just got a new automobile not so many weeks ago. My old one was a very dependable Chevy Impala, and I had nothing but nice things to say about it, but it was getting kind of old. It was a 20... Now, what was it? I think it was a 2008 model. Good car. Gave me good service for many, many years. But it had got a lot of miles on it. I think at the last count, it was somewhere around 420,000 miles on it. And I'd had to put a new engine in at one point and a new transmission. Actually, rebuilt ones. I didn't buy brand new ones, but I bought rebuilt ones. But even then, with that many miles, my brother-in-law in particular was getting worried that it was going to leave me stranded somewhere. And at my age, that could be pretty unpleasant, especially in the winter. So I'm pleased to have a new automobile. And why did I bring that up? Oh, I know why, because of the next article, which has to do with electric vehicles. Now, I am not out and out against an electric vehicle. It might be kind of fun to drive. But I live out in a fairly rural area, and I just don't know if there's any place to charge them up. Plus, I'm told they're pretty expensive. So maybe someday. But I got a good old-fashioned gasoline-powered automobile, SUV. Now, this has to do with school buses. This came out of Fox News. The date was... Well, you know what? I don't see that I put the date, but it was probably, I got this on Monday, yesterday, which would have been the 22nd of December. And so this probably was dated either Sunday the 21st or Monday the 22nd. At any rate, it's Fox News by Andrea Margolis of Fox Business in particular. The headline says, New York parents say kids freeze on mandated electric school buses during brutal winter weather. The subtitle says, parents report children coming home cold after drivers told, eating drains the battery capacity. That's a little quote. Drains the battery capacity. All right, here's the article. Video provided by the Austin Independent School District in Texas captures Waymo, W-A-Y-M-O, autonomous vehicles driving past stopped school buses in 2025, raising fresh safety concerns about the technology. Parents in Western New York are raising alarms over cold rides and breakdowns after officials mandated that all school bus purchases must be electric by 2027. I will just stick my 2 cents worth in, this is Lou. Sounds like we got some old folks up there that think you gotta get those electric vehicles. No more of this terrible gasoline stuff. Well, back to the article. Local outlet WIVB reported that the law has drained the ire of parents. In the Lakeshore Central School District, the station received, quote, several calls, unquote, over the electric buses, with parents claiming that their children are freezing when they come home from school. According to WIVB, the district operates 23 electric buses, 24 gasoline buses, and 4 full-size diesel buses. Scott Ziobro, a local parent, told the radio station, or possibly TV station, well, the heaters on the bus run off the same electricity as the bus itself. They were told that it drains the battery capacity of the bus itself. Well, again, this is Lou speaking. Seems like that's not a very good design if it's doing that. Didn't they know about that when they designed the bus? And when they said they were good for upstate New York? I don't know. But back to the article, several parents told the outlet that they heard of at least one instance of buses breaking down in addition to the heating issues. But Chris Lampman, a concerned parent, claimed that a bus broke down en route. And this is a quote from him. They deployed a substitute bus, and the bus was more than 30 minutes late. My son stood outside for over 35 minutes waiting for a bus that wasn't coming. And he continues, some of those kids are in there for upwards of a half hour or more while the bus makes its route. There's no reason why the kids should freeze for all that time. Unquote. Local grandmother Lynn Urbino told WIBB that she was horrified when her grandson told her that the bus didn't have its heat on. She said, My grandson came home from school last week when it was 23 degrees, Urbino said. He said they didn't have heat. He came in cold, and I said, isn't the bus warm? And he said, no, they can't put the heat on because it drains the battery. Superintendent Phil Johnson told WIBB in a statement that he is aware of the complaints and that the school district's transportation procedures require heat. Johnson said, quote, all routes are planned so that the electric bus battery capacity is more than sufficient to support both the route and continuous heating even in winter weather. The district values its transportation staff and continues to provide training and support to ensure students and staff are safely transported. Unquote. And then he added the statement, we appreciate the efforts of our staff as we navigate our transition to electric buses as required by NYS. Unquote. The New York State Energy Research and Development Authority website claims that electric school buses are capable of keeping heat on in cold weather. And the website also says, according to the WIBB, quote, while battery range can decrease in cold weather, they are still sufficient to operate or to complete operations on most, get that word, most local bus routes. Okay, somebody seems to be, shall we say, stretching the truth. Not just the Lou commenting on that. This is my own comments. Either the buses work or they don't. You know, it's not like an opinion matter. Either the bus, let's just say the batteries, are good enough and strong enough to power the vehicle, keep the motor running, and also provide heat. Or they're not good enough for that. And I don't like that last statement. It sounds like equivocating when he says, they, meaning the batteries, are still sufficient to complete operations on most local bus routes. Most. What about the ones that they aren't? And why not? Well, let's hope the parents get to the bottom of that. Once again, that was from Fox News. And I don't get the exact date, but it was by Andrea Margolis. And it would probably have been this past Sunday the 21st or Monday the 22nd of December. Okay, last week one of the stories was about the Bondi Beach terror attack in Australia against the Jewish group. And here we have a little update from the New York Post. It reads, well, the title reads, Australian PM Anthony Albanese apologizes to Jewish community after Bondi Beach terror attack. Says he feels, quote, weight of responsibility, unquote. This once again was from the New York Post and written by Emily Crane, published December 22nd, 2025. Embattled Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese apologized to the Jewish community Monday, a day after he was loudly booed at a vigil for the 15 killed in the Bondi Beach terrorist attack, admitting he feels the, quote, weight of responsibility, unquote, for the hate-filled anti-Semitic massacre. The embattled lefty leader, who has been widely accused of failing to curb surging anti-Semitism, voiced regret after his humiliating reception from thousands of mourners, marking a week since ISIS terrorists shot up a Jewish Hanukkah celebration. And Albanese said, as he addressed the crowd's furious reaction toward him, quote, emotions were raw, and a lot of people in the community are hurting and angry, and some of that anger was directed toward me, and I understand that. He added, as Prime Minister, I feel the weight of responsibility for an atrocity that happened while I am Prime Minister. And I'm sorry for what the Jewish community and our nation as a whole has experienced, unquote. Albanese has faced widespread backlash in the wake of last week's bloodshed after critics accused his center-left government of failing to curb a surge in anti-Semitism since the war in Gaza broke out. Albanese's apology came soon after he announced a review of the country's law enforcement and intelligence agencies following the attack. He said the review, which will be led by a former chief of Australia's spy agency, would investigate whether federal police and intelligence agencies have the, quote, right power, structures, processes, and sharing arrangements in place to keep Australians safe, unquote. Jewish leaders, however, have called for a royal commission, the most powerful type of Australian government inquiry, to be set up to investigate the attack. Albanese defended the move for a review into security agencies rather than a royal commission, insisting it would be faster. He said, quote, the review will enable action to take place, unquote. What we want to do is, if there are any holes, any findings, any actions that are required, we want that to occur. Well, again, that was from the New York Post by Emily Crane, December 22nd, 2025. I can't say that I really know enough about that to comment, but to me, a massacre of 15 people, actually more than that, but 15 were killed, that would seem to demand a very, very comprehensive review of what went wrong. And this, as I recall, was a father and a son. Now, I realize that not all such things can be prevented. There are going to be unpreventable attacks by hate-filled monsters, is what I would call them. Nevertheless, I would think that you would want to have the most comprehensive, intense inquiry possible into something like this to try to make sure it doesn't happen again. All right, and in connection with that, we have something from a senator who has been, to my way of thinking, one of the best senators in the whole Senate. He has come out and said what his conscience tells him to say. This is in the Western Journal by Marianne Angela, December 21st, 2025. That would have been Sunday of this past weekend. In the headline, Fetterman rips into fellow Democrats after anti-Semitic Australia shooting. Quote, a rot within the American left, unquote. Democratic Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman said Monday that a rot within the American left has allowed anti-Semitic extremism to fester. At least 15 people were killed Sunday when a gunman opened fire during a Hanukkah celebration at Australia's Bondi Beach, where hundreds gathered for the annual Hanukkah by the Sea event, according to Australian officials and media reports. A appearing on their record with Greta Van Susteren, Fetterman tore into his own party after the deadly shooting. He said Democrats have grown comfortable excusing extremist language instead of confronting terrorism against Jews. He said, quote, "Here in my own party, I've been incredibly disappointed. People are trying to pretend these kinds of words and terms like from the river to the sea or to globalize the intifada and all those other things." Fetterman told host Greta Van Susteren, "We all know what this means, and I refuse to pander to that. And for me, it's been a rot within the American left and within my party. Call it what it is, and stand with Israel, which is the one nation in the region that lives and protects those kinds of values," unquote. And Susteren pressed Fetterman on whether the media has met its responsibility to confront terrorism directed at Jews. And Fetterman said the press failed that test. Fetterman said, quote, "I read virtually everything on the mainstream outlets like the New York Times. You consistently get a strong anti-Israel view on those things. And other media as well, too. Call it what it is." And that ends that quote. New York City Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani previously declined to directly condemn the phrase "globalize the intifada." And let's see now. These are Mamdani's words. That's not language that I use. The language that I use and the language that I will continue to use to lead the city is that which speaks clearly to my intent, which is an intent grounded in a belief in universal human rights, Mamdani said. He went on, and ultimately, that's what is the foundation of so much of my politics, the belief that freedom and justice and safety are things that, to have meaning, have to be applied to all people. That includes Israelis and Palestinians as well. And Mamdani has drawn scrutiny for both his policy agenda and his remarks on Israel, including comments he made during an interview on The Bulwark. That must be the name of the show, The Bulwark. When host Tim Miller asked whether the phrases "globalize the intifada" and "from the river to the sea" make him uncomfortable, Mamdani said he would not support banning the language, a response that prompted backlash from Jewish advocacy groups and others. This came, by the way, from the Daily Caller News Foundation by way of the Western Journal and appeared on December 21st, 2025. And this is not the first time, this is Lou speaking now, that Fetterman has had the courage to go against some of the Democratic statements, apologies, and so forth. He seemed to be his own man, and although I didn't support him, because I'm not in Pennsylvania, so I wouldn't have been able to vote for him anyway, but although at the time he was running, I didn't think highly of him, now I've come to think of him as much in a much better way. I think he's a courageous guy who says what his conscience tells him to say. So anyway, that was December 21st, Western Journal. Again, if you want to contact me, they'll get a couple of books left, maybe as many as six or seven at least, of COVID and Coming Chaos, the book that Elizabeth, my late wife, and I wrote a few years back. Still very relevant because COVID is still around. I tested positive for it at a little, using a little Walmart test. I can't say for sure that's highly accurate, but at least it seemed to say I had COVID a few weeks back. Not a very severe case, and it seems to be the case that it's not as severe now as it was, say, 2020. Nevertheless, it is out there. And so our little book, and it's not that little, it's a fairly good-sized book, is still relevant. And it's a good historical presentation of what was going on. Some of the deception, some of the wrong-headed policies, some of the things that have hurt our educational system, and it may be several years before it bounces back completely. So if you'd like a copy of that book, it's free. It would be helpful if you could send us a little contribution to cover the postage. But I can usually send it out for about $5. So if you can send me $5, or if you can't afford that, just write to me anyway. All you have to do to get the book is write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We have a little tiny post office here in Bethlehem, and it costs a stamp. At this time of year, it's a very popular one. We have people coming from far and wide so that their Christmas cards can be stamped, Bethlehem. And there's a neat little stamp that we can stamp ourselves that shows the wise men approaching the star. So, again, all you've got to do is write to me. I'll send you the book. I've got a couple that I'm going to send out. Someone requested two. And if you can use two, I'll be glad to send them to you. Now, when these are gone, they're gone. I really can't afford to get another big order because you've got to order quite a few at once. And anyone that wants them, just write to me, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And just put a little note in. Just say, please send me your COVID book. Or even just, please send me your book. And I'll get it out as soon as possible. Things have been mighty busy here. As most of you know, my wife passed away 10 months ago. And she loved Christmas, and I was determined to celebrate this Christmas in her honor. So I have been mailing out Christmas cards. It's taken up a lot of time because I felt that it was my duty to put little messages in to friends and relatives. And so I've been a little behind in thank you notes to those who have made contributions to help keep the program on the air. And if some of you can do that, make some contributions, it would be much appreciated. Things are always a little slow this time of year because everybody's busy. And I know I'm one of those. So, but I did get a couple of very, very nice, encouraging notes with some little contributions over the last few days. One big one, in fact. So thank you to those folks, and I'll try to get some actual thank you notes out over the next several days once the busy time eases up a little bit. Well, back to some of the articles. What do we have here from Fox News? Trump administration pausing all offshore wind project construction due to national security concerns. Now, this one really caught my eye. You wonder how there's a connection between windmills, glorified windmills that are generating electricity, and national security. Well, let's see what it says. This is by Andrew Mark Miller of Fox News, published December 22nd, 2025. That would have been, what would that have been? Monday. President Donald Trump's Department of Interior announced on Monday that effective immediately leases for all large-scale offshore wind projects being constructed in the United States will be paused. In a press release, DOI, that's Department of the Interior, wrote that the pause is due to, quote, national security risks, unquote, identified by the Department of War in, quote, recently completed classified reports, unquote. In a press release, DOI says the pause will, quote, give the department, along with the Department of War and other relevant government agencies, time to work with leaseholders and state partners to assess the possibility of mitigating the national security risks posed by these projects, unquote. And then we have a quote from Secretary of the Interior, Doug Burgum. He said this in a press release, the prime duty of the United States government is to protect the American people. Today's action addresses emerging national security risks including the rapid evolution of their relevant adversary technologies, that is, adversary technologies, and the vulnerabilities created by large-scale offshore wind projects with proximity near our East Coast population centers. The Trump administration will always prioritize the security of the American people. Unquote. The Department of Interior listed five leases that will be paused. Vineyard Wind 1, I guess that's the name of the company, Vineyard Wind 1, or the project, Revolution Wind, CVOW, Sunrise Wind, and Empire Wind. The department highlighted unclassified reports from the U.S. government in the past that have long found that massive turbine blades in large-scale offshore wind projects can create radar interference called clutter that can obscure legitimate moving targets and generate false targets. In 2024, the Department of Energy report found that while the radar threshold for false alarm detection can be increased to reduce some of that clutter, the radar can miss actual targets. That's in quotes, miss actual targets when that threshold is increased. And the press release goes on to say, today's action ensures that national security risks posed by offshore wind projects are appropriately addressed and that the United States government retains its ability to effectively defend the American people. Unquote. And again, that appeared in Fox News December 22nd by Andrew Mark Miller. Well, now, the week couldn't go by without something about ICE and the immigration situation. So here we have an article from the Washington Times by Stephen Dinan, D-I-N-A-N, Sunday, December 21st, entitled, Judge's Conviction in ICE Obstruction Case Vindicates Courthouse Arrests. The Trump administration landed its first major victory in its bid to quell anti-ICE resistance with the conviction of Hannah Dugan, the Wisconsin state judge who obstructed officers trying to arrest an illegal immigrant in her courtroom. Brad D. Schimmel, the U.S. attorney whose office led the prosecution, said the case was also a victory for the principle that immigration officers should be permitted to make arrests in courthouses. That is increasingly a contentious matter, with states such as New York adopting bans on arrests in state courthouses. Mr. Schimmel suggested that such restrictions are misguided, as they remove a key location where arrests can be made in a controlled environment with reduced danger of weapons, which are prevented by security at courthouse doors, and other forms of chaos. He said that's as true for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, that is ICE, as it is for anyone else. Mr. Schimmel said, quote, here they were carrying out their sworn responsibility to execute an arrest warrant. When they perform their duties, they should reasonably be entitled to do so in the safest possible conditions. When someone, especially a sworn public official, puts them in unnecessary danger by obstructing those efforts to make an arrest as safely as possible, they must be held accountable. Unquote. Judge Dugan was convicted by a federal jury on one felony count of obstruction. The jury acquitted her on a misdemeanor charge of concealing a target from arrest. After the verdict, Dugan's legal team laid out his plans for an appeal. And I'm going to jump down a little bit in the interest of time. Background is this. A team led by ICE and joined by FBI and Customs and Border Protection personnel went to the Milwaukee County Courthouse on April 18th, to try to arrest Eduardo Flores Ruiz, an illegal immigrant who has been deported but sneaked back into the U.S., a felony. He was appearing before Dugan on an unrelated state battery charge. interesting. I'll just put my two cents worth in again. This is Lou speaking. Notice he wasn't just some innocent guy. Well, at least it doesn't seem to have been innocent, because he was charged with battery. As an assault and battery, kind of battery. Going on with the article, prosecutors said in their case to the jury that Dugan distracted the ICE team by challenging their civil arrest warrant and then telling officers they had to speak with the chief judge. She then cut short the criminal proceeding against Mr. Flores Ruiz and allowed him to exit her courtroom through a non-public door. Dugan argued that her actions were within the scope of her duties as a judge. She also said courthouses are special places where people need to be able to come and go without fearing entanglements in civil affairs. Immigration proceedings are generally civil matters, with the consequence being deportation, rather than criminal matters. Dugan's attorneys argued in briefs, asking for a directed verdict of acquittal, quote, whatever the accuracy of the government's claim that there was a pending proceeding against EFR, that's the defendant here, he was out of reach in that courthouse on that day, unquote. And it goes on, in that place and on that day, the federal agents had no right to execute that civil warrant or otherwise serve civil process at all, they wrote. But U.S. District Judge Lynn Adelman rejected that argument. And let me jump down a little bit. This is a pretty lengthy article. Some of you might want to read the whole of it. Mr. Schimmel, the U.S. attorney, said the case demonstrated that courthouses are not only acceptable, but also preferred locations for arrest. After Mr. Flores Ruiz went out the side door of Dugan's courtroom, he was able to make it onto the street. Members of the ICE team chased him, dodging through traffic, and then brought him down with a tackle. Mr. Schimmel said that sort of interaction is fraught with danger points, and it was lucky that nobody was injured, including civilian bystanders. All right. Then they say local prosecutors cited some such cases in defending the state's ban on ICE arrests in courthouses. Let's see now. Well, I believe those are the most important points. I'm just looking now to see if there's anything else that is. Okay, the Justice Department sued earlier this year to stop New York's courthouse ban. U.S. District Judge May D'Agostino, an Obama appointee, rebuffed the lawsuit, saying the state had a right to block ICE. She said that doing otherwise would be allowing the feds to commandeer the state's police for their own purposes. Let's see now. But Matthew O'Brien, a former immigration judge and now deputy director of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, called courthouse bans absurd. He said immigration is the one area where states want to thwart the federal government. Mr. O'Brien said it was significant that Dugan was convicted by a jury in Wisconsin, a politically moderate state. He said, quote, it sends a signal that a jury looked at this and said this judge was engaging in behavior and involved herself in trying to prohibit the exercise of a legitimate federal authority, unquote. And there is more to that article if you'd like to read it. You can go to the Washington Times, look for the article on Sunday, December 21st, by Stephen Dinan, D-I-N-A-N, entitled Judge's Conviction in ICE Obstruction Case Vindicates Courthouse Arrests. All right, let's take a little break from these articles. There's some other good ones, but I wanted to get to a couple of things that my good friend up in Massachusetts, my home state, sent me. He sends me many good articles on a consistent basis. I thank him for that. I wouldn't want to thank you, but I wanted to thank him on the air for many of these things. There was one that mentioned Maryland, and I'm not sure I can find that on the spur of the moment. I've got a whole bunch here of good ones. Let's say, oh, what should we pick here? Here's one. I believe this was the front page of the New York Post, Metro Edition. "They Hate You" was the headline. 39% of Jewish college students hide their faith out of fear. And Columbia, among schools scoring Fs in anti-Semitism report card. I believe I covered that in a little detail a while back, so I won't go into that in depth. Here we go. "Christmas manger should bring joy, not debate." This is by Lou Murray. This was from, what was the source of this one? Boston Herald, December 9th, 2025. Just read a little bit of this. "I'm very sad that at Dedham is a town in Massachusetts, that a Dedham Catholic parish has used a Christmas manger scene to attack law enforcement and promote open border and illegal immigration. The teachings of past Boston cardinals and the Universal Church have much more in common with President Donald Trump's America First policies, that is, America First policies, than with the angry social justice warriors who have effectively desecrated the church." In a famous post-World War II sermon at the Boston Cathedral of the Holy Cross for the veterans of foreign wars, Cardinal Cushing, and I'll interject, he was the cardinal who presided over John F. Kennedy's funeral when I was a young man, many moons ago. But Cardinal Cushing summed up a real Catholic teaching very well. "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." This is all in quotes now. "The same law which causes us to love all, even enemies, binds us to love more intensely those who are nearer to us in kinship or in association. Hence the love of our fellow citizens and of a civil society which they have organized for their common good, which society we call our country, is a derivative of the divine law of charity itself." Good article, and just don't have time to quote it all. But the point here is that the manger scene, the nativity scene, it shows a picture in this Boston Herald article. This scene has a sign that reads, "Ice was here in place of where Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus should be." So in other words, they're making a political statement, not a religious statement, but a political statement, criticizing ICE. Now, I don't remember reading in my Bible that the Holy Family were immigrants. It seems to me they were people that lived in Israel. But, you see, this is pure politics. Well, all right, that was the Boston Herald, December 9th. There were several articles pertaining to that. And here's one that shows students, let's see, let's count them up now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 students at San Jose High School form a human swastika. They were lying down, chose a picture of them, in such a way that the design was a swastika. And they did that on the school's football field, which was shared on social media. Also a quote from Adolf Hitler. And this article was from the New York Post, Tuesday, December 9th, entitled, "A Sickening Sign of Hate." And let's see now. Just read a paragraph or two. 8 San Jose high school students formed a human swastika on their school's football field in a horrifying display of anti-Semitism that has sent shockwaves through the Silicon Valley community. The disturbing scene was photographed and shared in a since-deleted Wednesday social media post that featured an anti-Semitic 1939 quote from Adolf Hitler. And basically, I don't have time to read the whole quote. You can find it. I've seen it in many history books. The quote basically says from Hitler that if the international Jewish financiers in and outside Europe should succeed in plunging the nations once more into a world war, it's going to be the end of Jewry in Europe. That's paraphrasing. And what kind of action, if any, the school is going to take, I don't know. I don't believe it even says. Let's hope they take some kind of action. However, it's the closing part says, trouble and responses. And this is a quote from anti-Semitism is pervasive and growing. It's leading to harassment and violence against Jews. Yet, there's an orchestrated campaign to deny its existence. We see this in the lies spread in opposition to the Jewish community's work this year to pass state and legislation on school anti-Semitism. And I believe this is the California senator saying that. Senator Scott Wiener. But Wiener's post, however, he elicited a wave of troubling responses supporting the eight students. One read, quote, this gives me faith in the next generation. Another user wrote, the youth are human. And what's meant by that? But, again, the rise of anti-Semitism is a very troubling thing in this country and in the world at large. Well, let's see. What else we have here? Oh, Harvard is being black with a federal complaint over a race-restricted scholarship program that is limited to students of color. With a segregation there, reverse segregation, whatever you want to call it, that appeared in the New York Post December 8th. And let's see now. Many other good articles. There's one entitled Dems, meaning Democrats, forget Obama's drone strikes. This is in the Boston Herald, December 8th, by Peter Lucas. Says Pete Hegseth's mistake was not allowing the Democrats to rescue the two narrow, to make that narco terrorist that he blew out of the water along with their drug boat the other day. One leading Democrat, Representative Tim Hines of Connecticut, called them, quote, shipwrecked sailors. Oops. And, this is the one. Yes, this is Lou speaking. This is the one that mixes my original home state of Massachusetts with my current residence in Maryland. Unfortunately, Maryland has two Democrats as senators. Been a while since we had a Republican, quite a while. And one of those is Senator Chris Van Hollen, who was a supporter of the guys who got blown out of the water for smuggling drugs. It says both Markey, that is Edward Markey of Massachusetts, and Van Hollen of Maryland, called the killing of the two drug runners a war crime, and Hegseth a war criminal. And both of them have shown more sympathy for the drug dealers than they have for the thousands of young Americans who are killed by that deadly product, as witnessed by their indignation over the strike. Another good article, and time doesn't permit us to read it all, but you get the gist of it. That appeared Boston Herald, December 8th, 2025. Dems forget Obama's drone strikes. You can tell what the rest of the article is pretty much about by the title. Back to some articles I got. Here's a lengthy one. Let me see now. I'll just give a few of the highlights. This runs to about, I think, 9 or 10 pages. It has a lot of details. You may want to look this one up. It appeared on Fox News. The title reads, "Leaked University of Illinois Lecture Material Blames Trump for, quote, white supremacy, unquote, and embraces far-left activism." The subtitle says, "Leaked PowerPoint slides show Education 201, that's the course title, EDUC 201 course, promotes left-wing talking points on immigration and race." This appeared on December the 22nd, which would have been Monday, of 2025, by Peter Dabroska, D-A-B-R-O-S-C-A, again at Fox News. This would be well worth checking into. I would think that you can probably get this online. If you just go to Fox News and do a search for Leaked University of Illinois, that's probably enough to get it. I'll read you a few of the highlights, and there's, like I say, this goes to about 9 pages, and there's no way I'll get it all in, so I'll give you some of the highlights. Fox News senior national correspondent Rich Edson reports on findings about students' preparedness for the next level on America Reports. Leaked PowerPoint lessons from a first-year education course. Get that. Again, let me put my 2 cents worth in. This is for the freshmen at this college. Now, these are fresh out of high school. They simply don't have the wherewithal to determine, you know, is this legitimate? Is this a bunch of bull? Is this something to be believed? But getting back to it, Leaked PowerPoint lessons from a first-year education course at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, show extreme left-wing bias on the topics of illegal immigration as well as race and gender. Fox News Digital obtained slides of that course, EDUC 201, Education 201, an education course for first-semester students titled Identity and Difference in Education, from a student whistleblower. Now, right away, all right, I'm going to have to put my 2 cents worth in again. I majored in education. I didn't major in education. I majored in math, but I minored in education at a college noted for training teachers up in Massachusetts as a young man. We did not have any education courses the first year. We had the basic curriculum, English, history, math, science, the core subjects. We didn't get to the education courses in my memory till perhaps second year, second semester, might have even been third year, first semester. So it seems to me a little odd that you're indoctrinating these students, and that's what it is, of course, indoctrinating them. As soon as you get a hold of them, as soon as they're freshmen, and even in the very first semester. Well, let's get back to this a little bit. The Fox News got these slides about this course from a student whistleblower. The lesson from week 15 was called Living in Uncertainty, Understanding Immigrant, Migrant, and Refugee Student Populations, containing 25 slides promoting leftist talking points on immigration. The course is taught by Professor Gabriel Rodriguez in the school's College of Education. The first slide features a photo of a person holding a sign at a demonstration that reads, "No human being is illegal." And they show a picture of that. This article actually shows that very picture of that very sign. The fifth slide is called Language Matters, and polices students' language about immigration and immigrants. And here's a quote from the slide, "Embrace using humanizing language when talking about immigrant communities that don't have documentation. Consider using the language of undocumented," the slide says. And it goes on, "Using terms like illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, or illegals is harmful," the slide says, explaining that using those terms is dehumanizing and degrading. and that's in quotes, dehumanizing and degrading, that they reinforce existing negative stereotypes about immigrant communities and connect immigrants with criminality, that they fuel perspectives that immigrants have no rights, and that they facilitate scapegoating communities for larger systemic issues, unquote. Okay. Now, listen to what Lou says. Illegal is a correct term for these people. They are illegal. They broke the law to come over the border, undocumented. But you see, this is the woke leftist agenda, which unfortunately is what a lot of the politicians, particularly the Democrats, subscribe to. They don't like to use the fact that they're illegal aliens, even though it's true. All right. The article goes on explaining the difference between immigrants and refugees. The presentation insists, without making the distinction between illegal and legal immigrants, that, quote, immigrants migrate to pursue better opportunities, for example, work and education, unquote. Refugees flee other countries to avoid persecution, conflict, or violence. So it has, I guess, as part of the material, yeah, one of the slides, it says key terms, immigrant, migrant, refugee, 1.5 generation immigrants, mixed with that as families. Well, you get the idea. That's just about 2 pages out of 9. So we may have to cover a little bit more of this next week. Well, I wish all of you a very nice Christmas. You may have already been celebrating by the time you hear this. I hope it was a good one. Happy New Year. Tune in again next week to the Divided Kingdom. This is Lord Family. Wishing you all good night.